So think about that. That if we turned off our devices, that the messages sent back would say, would be destroyed. Try back again later. And the problem is now, if we step away from our devices, we step away from our ability to connect with others. And this bind that we may be in of not wanting to be on Zoom or not wanting to text or have some device somewhere, so as a connection point to others, if we lose that, then what? We're in the house with the people we've been in the house with for 24/7 for the last year. And some of us are like, too much, or we're in the house by ourselves and that's too much. So I'm just wanting to name what can be this a level of fatigue that is so taxing, the way we are living. And again, it's affecting across the spectrum. It's not affecting us equally, but there's a taxing on the system in this way that the concurrent conditions of the pandemic and the economic crisis for some, health issues for some, and the loneliness and the isolation for, I would say, most if not all of us. And the bridge I want to make to continue on the exploration of the Eightfold Path that we've been doing is this, the orientation towards wise view, wise understanding. And this is the first anchor, as it were, to use that as an image, on the Eightfold Path, that it is the precursor. Kind of get your head around what the wise view enables the other steps for us to walk on this path. It's not linear, although in the beginning it can feel like get one wise view, and then it's intention, and then it's working with speech, action, and livelihood. And then the last two of wise mindfulness and wise concentration are more heartfelt. But it's the orienting of the mind with our thoughts, we create our world. So we look at, okay, how am I holding this? Because so much of many of us struggling, like, how do I make sense of this time? How do I orient in a time that is profoundly disorienting? And we don't know. Someone wrote that there's a light at the end of the tunnel, and yes, may it be so. And yet when, how much longer is this tunnel going to be? And how do we allow ourselves to keep being able to return to an orientation that allows us to say, okay, it is just like this. The world is just the way it is. Not in, again, that someone brought up the beautiful point last week of like, it's not about accepting as it is and then just being a doormat and checking out. But it's more putting down the fight against how it is, putting down the fight, like somehow I've done something, or I'm not good enough, or I haven't done enough to be able to be successful in these times. Well, she is, or they are, or this family's having a nice time, or the way we can compare ourselves to others is just one, an energy drain. And it would be kind of categorized as wrong view. There's a story that I'm sure many of you have heard it, when the Dalai Lama came, I don't know if it was to Spirit Rock or not, but it was, I think I'm going to make up all these facts, but early on, say in the 80s or 90s, there's a convening of Dalai Lama and a number of Western meditation teachers. And he had said, like, what are your students struggling with? And one teacher raised his or her hand and said this, my student's self-loathing. And the Dalai Lama was like, what? And the translator tried to describe it. And the teacher went on to say, like, the students, they don't like themselves. And again, the Dalai Lama was like, what are you talking about? And the back and forth of the translator and the translator trying to explain this. And his answer was like, that's wrong view. Like the idea of not liking oneself, he'd never heard of such a thing. It's not part of at that time of his culture. I'm going to guess with the influence of American culture worldwide that may have changed. But this notion of the clarity with which he said, that's wrong view. And how there can be great skill in being able to avail ourselves of discernment of the way as we observe the patterns of our thinking mind to say, oh, that's wrong view, as a way of settling and creating some freedom from an unnecessary kind of oppression of the mind that's telling us like we're not good enough or we're not doing stuff enough, the judging, comparing. You know this, we know when the way our thoughts are moving doesn't feel good, that it's leading us to feel stressed out or lonelier than we were, somehow less than, that in of itself is an indication of, this isn't helpful, the way I'm thinking about this. In the teachings, the wise view is an orientation to some basic universal truths in this human realm is all that arises passes away. All relationships we have will end. Everything we own will either break or disappear, or we will somehow be separated. Put own in quotes. This is a natural part of this realm. When we fight that universal law, we suffer. We know this, we feel it all the time. Relationships that aren't working and we hold on to. When people die, there's obviously the grief that is warranted, absolutely. But the no, this can't be, it's not right. That line of it can't be like this, this isn't right, I've done something wrong. When an alternative view can be, oh, it is just like this. In this moment, it is just like this, as a way of releasing the fight against how we think things should be. I'm going to read from my phone because I was having printer issues. So forgive me, but there's a line access to insight is a wonderful website. For the Dharma teachings and in this the thicket of wrong views, the uninstructed run-of-the-mill person does not discern what ideas are fit for attention or what ideas are unfit. This being so, he or she does not attend to the ideas fit for attention and instead attends to those unfit. Those inappropriate thoughts are so self-centered. What was I in the past? What am I doing in the future? How am I? The way that we can so often think of ourselves in such profoundly self, like our thoughts are so self-referential. What about me? One of another universal trials is like this me, this my sense of grace, they're actually, it's always changing. You know, who I was when I was 12, who I was last week, who I will be next week, who I will be 10 years from now. It's changing. And if we allow ourselves an acceptance of the changing nature of our own beings, that there isn't something concretized. Well, I used to be able, when I was 20, I was a lot more fit. Well, yeah, right. That doesn't mean there's anything wrong with how it is now. It's just that's how it was then. It will be different 10 years from now. How can we accept the changing nature of our own selves? That's not fixed. We are not fixed. The people that we live with are similarly not fixed. The views we can have about people in our lives, we can make them fixed and concretize. We can hold people. Well, you did this thing 5 years ago and I'm still upset with you about it. Okay. That's a fixed view that we're holding on to. It concretizes someone else. Can we release that? Allow those that are around us with a sense of generosity to allow that those people are also changing and fluid, three-dimensional and changing. And one of the other universal truths is that which we cling to, the degree to which we cling is the degree to which we're going to suffer. And that was sort of the exploration in the nature of dukkha, of suffering, that we are oriented towards being dissatisfied, discontented, complaining, things aren't right. And to be able to, rather than grasp outwards in the external world to make things right, if I move the furniture around in my room, if I move the furniture of my life around, then, whew, well, then I'm going to be a lot happier. And then we do that and it's like, maybe not so much. And it's allowing ourselves to see into the deluded way of thinking that if I do X, Y, and Z out here, then I'm going to be happy. Certainly there are skillful ways in which we rearrange literally the furniture or the furniture of our lives to speak metaphorically. There are times where from discernment and wisdom, we make changes. Absolutely. That's a skillful use of wisdom and discernment. But when it's a grasping, if I only get this, then that's where we can get into trouble. And I think there can be ways we can feel that energetically, that if only, if this, then that can definitely be kind of a red flag of maybe, maybe not. Ajahn Suchito wrote, so one of the teachings in what, before I get there, one of another teaching kind of embedded in this wise view wise understanding teachings is the nature of karma, in the sense of if I do X, it will have a consequence. If I yell at my daughter, it will have a consequence. If I, whatever actions I may take that are unskillful, it's going to have a consequence. Any action that I undertake that is skillful will also have a consequence. The teachings of paying attention to our actions, to look at what's the motivation, to determine sort of whether something is wholesome or unwholesome, the teachings point to is what I'm doing, how I'm thinking, how I'm acting, what I'm putting out in the world, is it coming from the cluster of greed, hatred, and delusion? Okay, generally, any action I take that's rooted in greed, hatred, delusion, is going to likely be unwholesome and unskillful and will cause harm to myself or someone else. Whereas if my actions or thoughts or deeds are rooted from the basket of wisdom, loving kindness, and generosity, chances are good that those thoughts, actions, deeds, words will be wholesome and of benefit. And the teaching kind of allows us to check in, like, okay, if I cultivate the ability to slow down and inquire, where's this coming from? This thought, this action, this impulse. And to check out, is it from the roots of greed, hatred, and delusion? Or is it from the roots of wisdom, loving kindness, compassion, and generosity? And that can be kind of a good cheat sheet, almost, as it were. But this inquiry into motivation is a huge piece of living a more liberated life, because it allows us choice and an opportunity to discern, wait, what am I doing? And what do I want to do? These teachings so much point to, we all have choices of how we want to respond. We don't have choices. We don't have many choices of our life circumstances. Sometimes when we're 20, we might have more choices than we do when we're 50 or when we're 70. If we can accept, okay, this is how it is. I want to shift it. Okay. But to be able to, how am I responding or reacting to the conditions that are here? And that's sort of where we can get these moments of enlightenment, because there's ability to be like, I can choose. I can choose to have a reaction that's from this other basket of greed, hatred, and delusion, or anger, or clinging, or self-referentialness. Or I can choose from this other basket. I'm mixing metaphors around here, but this idea of being rooted in these beautiful qualities of generosity, loving kindness, and wisdom. That being said, I wanted to sort of an introduction to this quote from Ajahn Sucitto. All in all, the process of karma, the actions that what we do in the world, how we act, is like that of an ocean that can lift us up, engulf us, or sweep us in any direction. It operates through continual interplay between inherited effects as they arise in the present, and the range of consequent responses and inclinations to act. The past is not dead. Its effects carry potential, and the future will arise according to how we act. This is the seemingly boundless ocean of samsara. And I love this quote, because it's this nature of the past is very much kind of, we carry it. The inheritance of the past can, if we don't pay attention, habitually guide our actions. And the pointing is like, ooh, let's pay attention to what those inherited effects are. And make decisions. Do I want to do this? Do I want to be beholden to actions that happened before? Or can I strengthen the muscle and the capacity to say, okay, I can make choices here? And it's not easy. And sometimes those habituated patterns are rooted in trauma, and we need help in freeing ourselves from that. But the pointing of liberation, of choice, of how we act in the world. I'm going to read a few poems. Let's do this. Well, actually, and I come back. Part of the orientation of wise view, again, is the sense of being able to orient in a way that we can undertake the practice to live from a place of wisdom and compassion. as opposed to living from this habituated, conditioned way, the conditions we have from our culture, the conditions we have from our upbringing, and if we believe in such things, that whatever happened in past lives that's orienting and impacting us. There's a quote from Julia Childs, Zen Master Julia Childs. In department stores, so much kitchen equipment is bought indiscriminately by people who just came in from men's underwear. And I think this is just so funny as a way of pointing to, right, we can move in such a way that's so habitual that we don't even know what we're doing. We come in somewhere, we're thinking something, and we do this action. And how many times if we're walking somewhere or driving somewhere, and it's like, wait, what am I doing? Because we become mindless or preoccupied. And the teacher's like, no, wait, come back. Pay attention. What are you doing? From a gentle place, not critical, what are you doing? But just, hey, sweetie, where are you? Where are you orienting from? And again, this, the wise view says, everything arises, passes away. You know, if we act from an unskillful place, we're likely to cause harm. If we move from a more wholesome place, we're likely to be putting more beautiful energy into the world, a world so in need of our beautiful energy. This book, The Teachings of the Buddha, a collection of teachings from Jack. Do not form views in this world through either knowledge, virtuous conduct, or religious observations. Likewise, avoid thinking of oneself as either being superior, inferior, or equal to others. The wise let go of self and become free from attachments. They depend not on knowledge, nor do they dispute opinions or fix on any views. Again, I said this before last week, in the Metta Sutra, those the wise beings who release ourselves from fixed views, having this form of clarity, are not born again into this world. The releasing ourselves from a sense of fixedness on views or conditions. So again, the pointings here of just being able to be more fluid and understanding the changing nature of things. So I ask you to close your eyes. And ask each of us to just reflect, what are the values that anchor you in this time, in these challenging, exhausting times? You know, the three that I named of wisdom and loving kindness and generosity, those can be an anchor. But what are the heart values that are most dear to you? If you were to pick 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 as of qualities of the heart that would serve as roots for you in the earth, or the seeds that you would plant that would allow you to stay grounded and connected to the earth, connected to your authentic, wise heart. Quality like humor, truthfulness, patience, equanimity, wise effort, discernment, love, loving kindness, joy. Kind of cast the net wide to see what are the heart values that you most want to allow to guide, to lead with in the world, and how we think and how we act, how we orient. What are the values we hold most dear of how we want to show up in the world? And to see what comes, what answers arise. To pick a few that resonate on this day, this evening, most deeply as true values that we want to allow to guide us. It's almost on this path of this life. What are the light posts we want to have when we're walking through dark times, which I would say many of us are right now? What lamp posts of, we want it to be of generosity, humor, truthfulness, patience, integrity. What guides us? And what can we turn to in these times of darkness and challenge. And just to take a minute more or so here to see what it would be like if you gave yourself this gift to say, I will orient myself to these values. Perhaps check in the morning. Today, may I be guided by the forces of wisdom and generosity and loving kindness. What would that be like? How might that feel in the body? To check in the day, am I letting those qualities lead? Am I leading with those qualities? To reflect at night, how'd I do? Not in a judgment way, but just a reminder, sweetie, how'd you do? Ah, okay, not so great, okay. What would it feel like to allow yourself to be guided by these values? How might your life be different? How might you feel within yourself if you let these qualities be what guides you and what illuminates you? For again, the world needs us to be bright. So thank you all for hanging in there and for your wise and kind attention, and would love to open it up to hear what you'd like to share or what came up. And again, there hopefully will be time for everyone, but if not, please don't take it personally. So.